It's Wednesday, May 2nd, and this is Hacker Daily. Today we're talking about the co-founder of WhatsApp quitting Facebook, the revival of Detroit, California decides what makes someone a full-time employee, Git requests and garage doors, a new experimental video architecture, travel as a benefit, and a new app to declutter your browser. I'm Dave Zorab.
And I'm Harish Agarwal.
Thanks for tuning in to Hacker Daily, featuring top stories for hackers, founders, and makers. Let us know what you think via email at info@hackerdaily.co or follow us on Twitter on our brand new handle, Hacker Daily. And finally, don't forget to subscribe and rate us on your podcast app. Thanks for listening.
The Washington Post is reporting that Jan Koum, the billionaire chief executive of WhatsApp, is planning to leave Facebook. Facebook acquired WhatsApp for more than $19 billion in 2014, and Koum joined the board of directors, which he is also stepping down from. Koum was the only executive from an acquired company to serve on Facebook's board. The Post reports that the departure stems from a years-long culture clash between the privacy-focused founder of WhatsApp and other Facebook executives who have a track record of successfully monetizing large acquisitions with ads, like Instagram. The Post writes, Facebook needs to prove that its investment in WhatsApp, its largest acquisition ever, was worth it.
This next story is a little bit longer than usual, so I apologize in advance if I'm rambling a little bit. If you've picked up a glossy culture magazine recently, you've probably read some wide-eyed story about how the city of Detroit has made a remarkable comeback from its dark years of shuttered factories and urban blight. The New York Times, in particular, has some weird obsession with the city. I always had a feeling that they wrote a lot of articles about the city, and a little bit of Googling proves that out. Here's just a few of their recent headlines from the last few months. March 26, 2018, in Energized Detroit, savoring an architectural legacy. March 2nd, 2018, can fashion help Detroit make a comeback? November 20th, 2017, Detroit, the most exciting city in America? November 4th, 2017, Detroit, from Motor City to Housing Incubator. The Times added yet another to their string of Detroit love letters called Detroit Was Crumbling, Here's How It's Reviving, which reached the top of Hacker News this week and sparked a lot of discussion. So before I dig any deeper, let me be clear here. I think it's great that people are getting excited about Detroit. I'm from the western suburbs of the city, and I attended a Catholic high school in the city itself on the northwest side. We all know Eminem made 8 Mile famous. It's the northern border of Detroit. Well, me, I grew up on 9 Mile and went to high school on 7 Mile. Even though I moved away pretty much right after college, I go back several times a year to visit my family. We're all still kind of spread out on the suburbs around the city. As someone who grew up nearby, I always wonder, why is everyone so obsessed with Detroit? I love the city, but there's just something odd about the proliferation of comeback stories. Maybe the narrative is just irresistible. A boomtown goes bust, hits rock bottom after the Great Recession, and bounces back better than before. Or maybe it's that cultured newspaper readers love hearing about artists moving to places like Detroit and Berlin, even though they'd never move there themselves. Or maybe it's that Detroit is a wonderful and strange and somewhat tragic place, and all the stories really are justified. Well, here's one way I like to approach it. I think of the city as the Silicon Valley of the early 20th century. In startup circles, especially in SF and New York, we really like to think that we're changing the world with apps and blockchains and deep learning and all that stuff. But is there an invention that's literally reshaped our lives more than the car? So much of our built environment is determined by where we want our cars to take us and where our trucks can take our stuff. The smartest, most entrepreneurial folks of the early 1900s moved to Detroit to create new technology and to seek their fortunes. You know, maybe if Steve Jobs were a teenager in 1910 and wanted to make his own big dent in the universe, he might have moved to Michigan and fiddled with transmissions rather than hacking together boxes to make free phone calls. As car production ramped up, gobs of wealth was created in the city, and you can see it when you visit. the public buildings and museums are really amazing. You can go to the Detroit Institute of Arts and see major works by Picasso and Warhol and Frank Stella and beautiful murals by Diego Rivera, and you'll probably be one of the only people in the room. That kind of thing never happens at the Museum of Modern Art in New York. Of course, we all know the next part of the story, or at least we've heard some of it. Decades of decline and unemployment and blight. There's a confluence of factors that led to all this. There's globalization, explicitly racist policies to keep African Americans out of certain neighborhoods and out of homeownership and good jobs. There's race riots, white flight, there's more globalization and shuttered factories and lost jobs. There are a lot of great books on the subject. I'd recommend Once in a Great City, A Detroit Story by David Marinus, and the novel Middlesex by Jeffrey Eugenides, which covers the lesser-known 1940s race riots. So I'll leave the deeper analysis to the experts and just share my personal experience. I grew up in a comfortable, quiet, cookie-cutter suburb called Farmington, where we rarely ventured into the city itself. And growing up, I had no idea that the downtowns of other cities weren't mostly abandoned. The night before Halloween in Detroit was called Devil's Night, and the local news was filled with images of burning homes. A typical year in the 1980s in Detroit saw between 500 and 800 fires set in the few days leading up to Halloween. Though the auto industry was still hiring lots of kids out of my high school and college, most folks that I grew up with moved out of state to pursue economic opportunities elsewhere. And for the sake of time, let's skip a lot of important stuff, and we're just going to jump ahead to the late 2000s. Detroit is still struggling. Home prices took a steep dive as the city faced bankruptcy, and a corrupt mayor, who eventually was convicted of perjury, obstruction of justice, mail fraud, wire fraud, and racketeering. There were stories of people buying houses for $500 and renovating them and flipping them. Someone even wrote a book about it. I knew a guy from the San Francisco tech scene who moved to Detroit sight unseen and fell into a group of artists and techies who bought houses, staged one-night art events in them, and then renovated and resold them. The cheap rents and all the available space attracted all kinds of folks who were looking to do new things, though maybe the group it attracted most was journalists covering the Detroit revival. But okay, there is a revival going on. There's just a ton of cool stuff happening in Detroit, and Detroiters, both native-born and adopted Detroiters, are passionate about the city. But the real picture is a lot more complicated. Many of the folks who could leave the city in the decades of decline did, which left a core group of diehard residents who love the city and would never leave, and a big group of people who wanted to leave but couldn't for economic or other reasons. There are undercurrents of race and class beneath all this, which I'm not really qualified to comment on, but there's some good reading in the show notes if you want to dig deeper. To me, as an engineer, the math that the city faces is pretty intimidating. At its peak, 1.8 million people lived within the city of Detroit. And now, even though there are millions living in the metro area, less than 700,000 live in the city itself, over about 143 square miles. That means there are hundreds of thousands of homes that are unoccupied. A lot of them have decayed or burned down or been razed. But even if all those Times think pieces spurred some crazy number, like let's say 100,000 entrepreneurs and artists and other journalist-friendly types to move to the city, there would still be a gap of a million people from its peak, and there would be hundreds of thousands of vacant homes and buildings. I would love to see Detroit continue to rebound, to rebuild its infrastructure, add more jobs, serve its current residents better, and get more people to move back to the city. Every time I visit, I look for more signs of its revival. And I also visit the cemetery where my mom and her parents are buried. It's in a formerly affluent corner of the city on the northwest side, surrounded by black wrought iron fencing. And inside, the grass is green and well-maintained, and fresh flowers sit in front of huge monuments with names showing the different immigrant groups that passed through Detroit throughout the 20th century. It's clean and orderly and peaceful in the way that cemeteries usually are. But outside the gates, there are blocks and blocks of crumbling brick houses. There's the old city airport, which hasn't served any passengers since the year 2000. And there's a gas station that's been turned into a strip club, and I think it closed down. It's a jarring juxtaposition that I'm not sure I'm ever going to get used to, and as long as it's there, I'll know that Detroit still has a long way to go, no matter how many more articles show up in the New York Times.
Bloomberg Law is reporting that the California Supreme Court has transformed the test for who is an employee. In a ruling which may have an outsized impact on the gig or on-demand economy, the Supreme Court is adopting a so-called ABC test. The ABC test has previously been adopted by other states to determine if a worker is an employee or an independent contractor. This status is important as an employee is entitled to benefits a contractor is not. If a person meets all three of the following factors, they are now considered an independent contractor in the state of California. Factor 1. The worker has freedom from control over how to perform the service. Factor 2. The service is outside the business's normal variety or workplace. And Factor 3. The worker is engaged in an independently established role. One Hacker News commenter wrote of the decision, "I think it'll actually be good for Uber and Lyft because now they'll use some of that war chest to hire the best lawyers to figure out exactly how to best navigate the law, in California at least. And they will write their contracts in whatever way that best makes sure all three factors are present and they still get a healthy supply of drivers." Will Purse, an engineer, tweeted about how a mistake in API design led to his garage door randomly opening and closing at night. Purse had enabled wireless control of his garage doors with the WeMOS D1, a dev board based on the Arduino. He wrote, "The WeMOS exposes a simple web page with a link that says toggle. The endpoint for the link activates a relay, which is hooked up to the push button on the garage door, which makes the door raise, lower, or halt. This toggle endpoint responds to GET requests. I threw the code together in minutes and was too lazy to spend another couple minutes figuring out POST. Safari eventually figured out I used this toggle page regularly, so it added it to my favorites, which are iCloud synced between all my devices. So every time I opened a new tab on my laptop, desktop, iPhone, or iPad, the garage door opened or closed, late at night, early in the morning, or randomly throughout the day. For reference, requests made over the web are typically associated with different verbs like GET or POST. Web servers can respond to different verbs with different responses. By convention, when a request is made using the verb GET instead of, say, POST, the request is assumed to be safe, and generally assumed to not be changing anything on the service. By using the GET verb to control his garage doors, Purse exposed his garage doors to being controlled by third-party requesters who assumed that the request would be safe. While this standard is somewhat informal, many services now assume that GET requests won't change state, which can then lead to unintended side effects. The popular messaging app Slack will often automatically make GET requests whenever a link is pasted into its app in order to create a preview of the link. Hacker News commenter Bijou writes, "When I recently added click to unsubscribe functionality to my emails, the URL got wrote out into some logs. Those logs got written to a Slack channel, and Slack loves to click any link it sees. Oh, and it doesn't respect robots.txt, but all I saw was every member of my list clicking unsubscribe. It took a good hour to figure out exactly what was going on."
Researchers at Stanford have published a new experimental video architecture called Salsify, which aims to improve video quality and reduce delays when streaming real-time videos. According to the researchers, the improvements come from a completely different approach to video. Current video apps have two separate major components. There's a video codec for compressing the video, and there's the transport protocol, which is the data pipe over which the video is sent. Salsify's innovation is, quote, jointly controlling the frame-by-frame control of compression and the packet-by-packet control of transmission in a single control loop. This lets the video stream track the network's varying capacity, avoiding stalls, end quote. The reaction on Hacker News was very positive, with particular praise for how the team explained the technology on their website. One commenter, though, pointed out that Salsify currently doesn't transmit audio. Keith Winstein, one of the authors of the paper, replied that ultimately audio wouldn't affect their transmission metrics and that it would distract from their main work with video. For more, check the episode notes.
In the products that solve my pathological clutter problems category, a solo developer launched a browser extension he's calling Snooze Tabby. Anyone who has casually glanced at my monitor over the last few years is completely floored by how many browser tabs I have open. These tabs are the abandoned carcasses of articles I'd like to read later, products I'd like to try at some point, or credit card sign-up screens I'd like to avoid altogether. Snooze Tabby is already changing my life by allowing me to snooze these tabs. Now when I find an article I want to revisit, I'm opening up Snooze Tabby, setting a timer for later in the day, at which time the tab will reappear, and watching the number of tabs I have open slowly disappear.
A new startup called Tab, that's Tab, spelled with two A's, promises travel as a benefit, letting companies help their employees save towards travel. Drew Dalton, the CEO of Tab, explained, Tab is a travel and vacation-focused employee benefit that increases employee productivity and decreases employee burnout. Similar to a 401k or an HSA, employees contribute to their Tab account from each paycheck with their employer making a matching contribution. These funds are then available to the employee through a Tab-issued debit card, which will be approved for vacation-related expenses like flights, hotels, cars, and cruises, and declined at non-travel-related merchants like Best Buy, Apple, and Target. The company launched on Product Hunt on Monday and got a warm reception. Jake Crump from the Product Hunt community team wrote, "This is a really neat idea. It's always nice to take some time off and clear your mind. And my favorite place to do that is camping out in the woods." Many others echoed his praise. The link to check out Tab is in the episode notes, or visit taabcard.com. That's all for Hacker Daily today, Wednesday, May 2nd. And as always, we want to make Hacker Daily better every day, and we really can't do it without your feedback. So please reach out to us via email at info@hackerdaily.co, or you can follow us on Twitter @HackerDaily. And we'll be back tomorrow with more updates for hackers, founders, and makers. Thanks a lot for listening, and have a great day.